The House Committee on Revenue for March 31st, 2015 will come to order. I want to note for those who are here to testify today that the House ran quite long. It actually didn't adjourn until 1:30, which explains why we are late getting started today, an hour late, actually. We're going to go as expeditiously as we can, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3034. And would like to note that I have already noted, because I had plenty of time during the debate to look at the Oregon Legislative Information System for this bill, realize that there are 15 people who have already submitted testimony. If you have written testimony and are willing to submit it as written, you could get a copy to our staff. They will enter it, scan it into the Legislative Information System, and I promise you that I will encourage the committee members to read that testimony. If you want to give oral testimony today, we'll take as many as we can, but given the amount of time we have, I'm not going to promise that we can get through everybody. I will ask people to be as expeditious as possible. Kyle, would you introduce the bill for us, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3034, it would establish a full and partial property tax exemptions for all real or personal property of a nonprofit corporation providing health services, which is defined in the bill. A full exemption is available and dependent upon the Oregon Health Authority determining that the property is occupied or used to provide diagnosis and medical or surgical treatment, primarily for patients who are acutely ill, which is also defined in the bill, or the victims of accidents. Partial exemption is dependent upon Oregon Health Authority determining that the property is occupied or used to provide charity care. And the calculation for the partial exemption is allowed for the charity care if at least 15% of the gross annual patient revenue or the charity care is equal to at least 15% of the gross annual patient revenue of the nonprofit. The partial exemption is equal to twice the percentage of charity care as percent of the gross annual patient revenue, not to exceed 100%. So at minimum, a nonprofit would have to meet 15% for the charity care, and then the exemption would start off at 30% because that's double the 15%, but it can't exceed 100%. So you could possibly have a 100% exemption, but no more than that. The bill goes on to require applicants for exemption to file a claim with county assessor. The claim for the partial exemption is required to be filed annually with the county assessor on a form prescribed by Department of Revenue. Property that is leased from the taxable owner and used by a nonprofit corporation that meets the requirements in the bill supplying health services can also qualify for the full or partial exemptions. There's a prohibition for property of a nonprofit corporation providing health services from receiving exemption granted under ORS 307-130, which is an existing exemption for charitable, literary, and scientific organizations. So a number of nonprofits that are possibly receiving exemption currently under 307-130 would then be subject to the exemption language in this bill, but they would no longer be able to receive exemption under 307-130. There's some modification of existing statute for organizational purposes, and that's similar to, we had this discussion in House Bill 2690. There's some language related to rehabilitation facility and welfare programs. It looks like there's new definitions added, but related to reorganization. So we talked about this a week or so ago, but that's in here as well. It's an LC cleanup, and the change in the bill will apply to property tax years beginning on or after July 1st, 2015.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Vance, please.
Thank you. So, sorry I was a little late, but on page 1, line 20, sub 3, does sub 3 carve out hospitals and then sub 4 something else? Or does sub 4 modify sub 3 in section 1, page 1?
Section 1,
line 21.
So the Representative Bentz, so it's really pertaining to, there's two components of it. I think sub four would be related to the partially exempt portion, and that's with the charity care requirements that were described in the bill.
Let me read my concern. The sub three reads, property is exempt from taxation if OHA determines that the property is occupied or used to provide diagnosis and medical or surgical treatment, primarily for patients who are acutely ill or victims of accidents. Now that sounds like a hospital to me. And so my question is if all hospitals are in 3, then what's in 4A? Or or hospitals that find themselves in 3 somehow subject to 4A and B? That's my question.
Representative Vance, I believe it would depend upon the services they're providing. So there is definitional language for acutely ill. And so it'd be if a hospital is kind of meeting within those definitions of acutely ill, which is on it's line 7, it talks about that, and also the health services as defined in 442.015. So if a hospital is meeting within those definitions, then yeah, it'd probably fall within the subsection 3. And then other health services could possibly be under the sub 4s.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, please.
So my concern is that most of the hospitals I'm aware of would not meet some of the standards in 4A and B. They just wouldn't. And so I don't want that to be the case. That's why I'm asking.
I expect some of the witnesses will be able to explain some of why this bill is written the way it is. That may or may not help you. I don't know.
We'll find out.
Okay. Anything else for Kyle? There is another sign-up sheet for this bill, House Bill 3034, over on the table. If there's anyone who's not signed up in the next 5 minutes, you will be out of luck. So please sign up if you want to testify, if you haven't already done so. And then we'll pick up that sheet, and that will help me understand how long I can let people talk before we have to move on to the next person in order to finish with everyone. I'd like to hear from Tom Lynn Harris and Randy Woodruff first, and then we'll go on to others. Yes. Thank you.
Would it be possible to have
Please, that's fine.
Okay.
And I know this is a complex bill, but be as brief as you can.
Yes.
Thank you.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, I'm Randy Walruff, and thank you for calling us up today. Rebecca Hall with the Department of Revenue, we would like to go first to give a little background.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Rebecca Hall. I'm an analyst with the Property Tax Division of the Department of Revenue. And I'm here today just to provide some background and context for your consideration of this bill. The construction and application of the charitable exemption in ORS 307-130 has been problematic for quite some time. County staff processing charitable exemption applications can find themselves at a loss trying to decide what's charitable and how much charity is enough. Court cases construing 307-130 are not always helpful because the preferred standard of evaluation is subjective rather than objective. These perceived problems have led county assessors to form a charitable exemptions work group. And in the process, the Department of Revenue facilitated that work group. And in the process of working through some of the issues that the assessors had with ORS 307-130, they kind of keyed in on the issue of hospitals and medical clinics as a piece of that exemption that could be addressed separately and probably more expeditiously than the rest of the exemption. The reason for that is that there are some pending appeals that have highlighted some of the problems with evaluating the claims for exemption, especially in a situation where nonprofit hospitals acquire previously for-profit medical clinics. So there are several pending cases with that situation. Also, hospitals and medical providers are a little bit unique in the exemption world because most of their operating revenue comes from fees, as opposed to donations or volunteers. And then the landscape for this type of exemption is changing because of the Affordable Care Act. That has created some whole new requirements for hospitals, and with the additional insured, the opportunities for charity have been reduced. Just some context for the hospital exemption. The Oregon property tax exemption for charitable organizations dates back to at least 1854. At that time, back then, hospitals were used for poor people. If you had money, you had the doctor come to your house and treat you at home. And the only people that went to hospitals were the people that were too poor to pay for medical care. And so clearly, any hospital was providing charity by its nature. So the exemption was based on that concept of what a hospital was. But late in the 1800s, there were some medical improvements made, making hospitals more attractive to more wealthy patients, and so hospitals started charging people who could afford to pay all or part of the fee. the money at that time, the money from the paying patients was used to pay for the poor people. Over time, the house calls by the doctors faded away, and the hospital and clinic kind of became the standard of care in health care. This change in health care is reflected in the policies in both the federal and state tax laws and cases. Courts started crafting rules to figure out, is the hospital providing charity or not? Because they're charging for services. How do we tell if they're charitable? Back in 1913, the feds passed the first income tax. That tax code did not provide a specific per se exemption for hospitals, but hospitals were eligible for an income tax exemption through 501c3 of the code, but they had to be operated primarily for charity. Then in 1956, as hospitals started charging more patients for care, the IRS came up with a revenue ruling that required hospitals to provide charity care to the extent of their financial ability. So that went along until the enactment of Medicare and Medicaid in 1965. And now all of a sudden, hospitals didn't have nearly as many people to provide charity to because more people had insurance and more people were getting payment or the hospitals were getting paid for more patients. As a result, in 1969, the IRS established the Community Benefit Standard, different from the prior standard, which required charitable hospitals to accept Medicare and Medicaid patients, provide 24-hour emergency care, extend hospital privileges to all physicians, and maintain a community-controlled board, and continue to provide charity to the financial extent of their ability. In Oregon, we've kind of followed a similar path. In 1927, the Sisters of Charity case from the Oregon Supreme Court said that hospitals have no inherent tax exemption, but they can qualify for exemption as a charitable organization as long as they provide services free to anyone that needs them. Okay. In 1961, there's an Oregon Methodist Homes case where the Oregon Supreme Court set out seven tests for deciding. Okay, now that hospitals are charging fees, how do we decide if they're charitable? Most recently, the tax court decision in the Serenity Lane case, that's the Lane County one, considered factors such as free education for healthcare providers and community outreach in making it, so more of the community benefit standard there. And then the passage of the Affordable Care Act triggered the creation in 2010, the enactment of Section 501R of the Internal Revenue Code that implements sections of the ACA and requires that charitable hospitals have to establish written financial assistance and emergency medical care policies. They have to limit the amounts charged to individuals eligible for financial assistance. They have to make efforts to determine eligibility for financial assistance before they take some collection actions. And they have to conduct a community health needs assessment and implementation strategy at least every 3 years. So those are the new requirements by the IRS under the ACA. Now, of course, that's separate from a property tax exemption, but these are requirements that charitable hospitals have to fulfill. Our neighboring states have taken some different approaches to property tax exemptions for hospitals. In Washington state, hospitals only need to be nonprofit acute care facilities, and they're exempt. The medical clinics associated with hospitals can be exempt if the medical clinic is fully integrated into the administration of the hospital. So if there's an intervening organization, so if the hospital owns this medical clinic under an LLC, it wouldn't be eligible for exemption. But if it's directly administered by the hospital, then it would be exempt. There are some other types of medical clinics in Washington that could be exempt. For example, tissue banks, medical research facilities, and cancer clinics. There are some other specific requirements and specific statutes for those types of clinics. The approach in California is similar to Oregon, except that they've bifurcated the decision-making. So the State Board of Equalization determines if an organization is eligible for exemption, and then the local county assessor determines whether the use of the property qualifies it for exemption. In Idaho, few hospitals qualify for exemption under their general charitable exemption statute, because less charity is being provided there because they have a statute, a law that allows that if a hospital has charity write-offs, they can bill those write-offs to the county and get reimbursed for them. So there's less charity there, but they do have a general hospital statute. They have a specific hospital statute, excuse me, that provides for an exemption for nonprofit hospitals, and I think most of their hospitals are exempt under that statute. Over the years, the nature of hospitals and how they provide services and how they're paid for those services has changed significantly, which has sort of led us to this bill. And I'm going to leave it to others to speak to how this bill addresses those changes. Thank you.
Thank you. If you have that in writing, it would be wonderful if it could be provided to the committee.
I do, yes.
Thank you. Please, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Todd Linhares. I live at 740 Golden Pheasant Drive, Redmond, Oregon, and I'm here today representing the Oregon State Association of County Assessors. I won't go through my testimony completely because I have submitted it to OLAS, and that is available to you. I would point out that ORS 307130, the main charitable statute, exempts a significant amount of property from the rolls. 194.4 million revenue impact in the latest tax expenditure report. Yet the statute is very slim on details, on criteria as to what qualifies for exemption. Essentially, the statute reads, property shall be exempt if it is actually and exclusively occupied or used in the literary, benevolent, charitable, or scientific work carried on by such institution. But it doesn't define any of those terms. So it is becoming increasingly difficult for county assessors to administer your policy of exempting these properties because there are no definitions, no criteria. Assessors get together, and one assessor says, yeah, I had an application. In this situation, I approved it. Another assessor pops up and says, well, I had almost a similar situation. I denied the application. So your policy is not being applied consistently statewide. What we're trying to do is to hopefully write some statutory language that provides us a clear, bright line. What is your policy in terms of what should be exempt, what should be taxable? Unfortunately, and I'll steal a line from the U.S. Supreme Court, charity is like pornography. You can't define it, but you know it when you see it. But assessors are having more and more trouble seeing what's charity. And this, and when you apply that to hospitals, as Rebecca very, very clearly pointed out, hospitals and other medical facilities don't seem to be as charitable as Habitat for Humanity or some other social services organizations that qualify for exemption under this very same statute. So one approach would be to rewrite 307-130 to provide definitions and criteria. Another approach is to take hospitals and other medical facilities out of 307-130, not try to exempt them because they're charitable, but because they do good things. A win-win would be if we could write statutory language that was clear, concise, provided assessors with the direction they needed, but yet didn't necessarily remove any property that's currently being exempted off the exemption status, or vice versa, allow exemption for any properties that don't currently qualify. And I think, Mr. Chair, if I could attempt to answer Representative Bence's question, my interpretation of the bill is that subsection 3 is designed for hospitals. Hospitals, as defined by the Oregon Health Authority, that are owned and operated by nonprofit corporations would be exempt outright. They don't have to prove charity. They just are exempted by your statutory policy. Other properties owned by nonprofit organizations, doctor's offices, clinics, diagnostic labs, MRIs, that sort of thing, would have to meet a sterner test in order to qualify for exemption. That's my interpretation of what subsection 3 and subsections 4 do. County assessors don't want to take any property off. Well, some assessors, if you talk to them personally, might want to take some properties off the roll. The association's position is we don't take a stand on what property is taxable, what property should be exempt. That's a matter of legislative policy. We only administer the policy that you establish. What we're saying is the policy currently in statute is broken, and it's very, very difficult to administer fairly, accurately, and efficiently. And I think Oregon citizens deserve a property tax system that can be administered fairly, accurately, and efficiently. And that's what we're hoping this bill can accomplish. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. Again, I'm Randy Walworth, Multnomah County Assessor and Tax Collector. I'm currently the president of the Oregon State Association of County Assessors. Both Rebecca and Tom did a very good job of framing our position on this. I just want to point out a few things to highlight is, again, 307.130 lacks definition. Second, the landscape's changed. There's numerous tax court cases pending right now that we're expecting divergent rulings because many times it comes down to the legal argument made, and it hinges on such small things. I can pull out court cases and say, these look identical. Why is one exempt, one not? And then finally, the newest thing that's occurring most recently is not nonprofit exempt organizations purchasing for-profit medical clinics. Nothing changes the next day, and then they go to the county assessor and they basically say we should be exempt. It's charity by association. So some assessors approve it, some don't. And we could bring them in here. They could tell you all the properties, but it's happening. Then I have in my county, I'm in a position right now where we want to front end this discussion. With charity going down so much, and you can get that information from the Oregon Health Authority, it's down to between 2 and 3% in certain cases in the last 4 years. Well, we know from court rulings a long time ago that 7 or 8% was a good standard, according to the courts, but we haven't had rulings on 2%. So how much is enough? So I'm in the position where I have new clinics making applications, and I'm looking at needing to deny those applications as we speak right now. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Yeah, Representative Vega Peterson, please.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you for your testimony, and I apologize for my voice. So can you talk a little bit more about the 2%, what that means and what characterizes the kind of work that falls under that 2%?
I can try to address some of that. I don't know about the 2% specifically, but the Oregon Health Authority does collect statistics regarding hospital finances, and one of the statistics that they collect is charity care. That can be in a number of different areas. It can be bad debt written off, or it can be free care given to patients. And so the 2%, I'm not sure which number Randy was talking to, but I think if you look at the latest statistics that are out on their website, you'll see that since the advent of the ACA, the charity care being reported by hospitals has dropped precipitously. Now, I don't know if it's down to 2% for some hospitals, but it is going down because of the ACA.
Thank you, Randall Arf again, Chair Representative Peterson. I'm not a healthcare professional, but I have a page out of the Oregon Health Authority's report from 2014 on uncompensated care, and it actually shows a graph of total uncompensated care, and it shows it going down. Some people are at 4%, some are at 7%, and some are in the 2% range, and that report's available. And I do believe that there's some additional witnesses that'll be coming up that are much more skilled at speaking to those issues. Again, for us, we're looking for the clear, bright line. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you all three for really comprehensive testimony. It was well organized, and I think I covered I followed most of it. You may have already said this, but so I apologize if I'm asking you to repeat yourself. Can you help me kind of untangle the relationship between income tax exemption and property tax exemption? Does one follow the other? If you are income tax exempt, what are there automatic implications of that?
Go ahead. Chair Barnhart and Representative Reed. So they're really not connected, but they do inform each other a little bit, I think. The income tax deduction is set primarily by the Federal Internal Revenue Code. When looking at a property tax exemption, just having the income tax exemption under 501c3 is not sufficient for a charitable organization to become property tax exempt. there are further requirements under the statute beyond having that 501c3 designation. And so they also have to be they have to have charity as their primary purpose, and they, you know, there has to be gift and giving. And so there's a whole other set of requirements that go beyond what the income tax requirements are. But the income tax, the eligibility for income tax exemption is kind of the first step in getting to the property tax exemption.
So, Mr. Chair, please, quick follow-up. So it's necessary but not sufficient?
Mr. Chair and Representative Reed, not exactly necessary, because the statute says that they can qualify either by being exempt under 501c3 or under ORS Chapter 65, which is the Oregon version of the Nonprofit Corporation Act.
Thank you very much. Thank you,
Representative
Vance, please. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The charity care, I haven't looked up the definition yet. I'm going to guess it means that you don't get paid for it. But if this is a situation like so much health care is now that's paid for by government at some level, like in my area, maybe 80% of that which different groups receive is in one form or another from government. So if we take away their property tax exemption, the money seems to be just making a circle. How do we respond to that, and keeping in mind differences in levels of government?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Vince. To answer your question on this, from the policy standpoint, we're asking for a clear, bright line. When you ask about the definition of charity care, we don't have it in the current statute. It doesn't define gift and giving. It doesn't define what charity is. But under the bill, which takes medical services out of 30713 and creates a new statute, we actually look to the definitions in other statute already for administering health care. So section 1 little b says charity care as being given that term in definition in 442.200. So as you start to read through these, you'll see that this has all been tied back to medical services, the license of them, and the authority of the Oregon Health Authority. They know about health services. As far as the Assessors Association and our request for a clear, bright line, you could choose to implement this bill. It would be a clear, bright line if you just made, like, fraternal organizations, they're 100% exempt. That would be very easy for us to administer then. You could say that anything that is licensed and is a nonprofit under health services is exempt. So the working is what's in between. I do need to add that there is a dash one amendment that hopefully you have, and it helps to clarify a little bit of the vagueness on what your earlier questions were, Representative Benz, regarding the hospital facility versus clinics.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you all for really a great, clear presentation of a very complicated issue. And I'm actually just going to ask if you could go back briefly and say one more time what they do in California. I was furiously taking notes, and I'm sure I'll get this when you submit your written testimony. But if you could walk through that again briefly.
Sure. Representative Barnhart and Representative Smith Warner. In California, they have the hospitals are exempt as charitable organizations, just very similar to how we do it here. But there, they have bifurcated the eligibility determination process. So the State Board of Equalization will look at, is the organization a charitable organization? Once that determination is made, yes, this organization is a charitable organization, then the organization takes that certificate from the State Board of Equalization to their local county assessor and says, county assessor, I'm a charitable organization. I have this piece of property in your county, and here's how I'm using it. And then the county assessor has to look at the use of that property and say, yes, the use of this property in my county meets with the requirements of the statute. And so now, because you're a charitable organization and you're using the property the way the statute requires, you can be property tax exempt.
Okay, quick follow-up.
Please.
So that is perhaps not the bright shining line that you're looking for here, I would just guess. I mean, it sounds like the assessors there still are doing almost as much having to guess. And it's like, yes, they know from one perspective that it's a nonprofit, but they still are having to look at that property and see if they agree whether it's being used for a charitable case, which is much of what you all are here asking us to help you solve. Is that correct?
Representative Barnhart and Representative Smith Warner.
Depends what the statutes say.
So in Oregon, the determination for a charitable organization is twofold. It's first, is it a charitable organization? And second, are they using the property in a manner to further the charitable purpose? In California, they've split that up so that the State Board of Equalization answers question one and the county assessor answers question two. It does solve some of the problems for the assessors because they're only having to answer half the question instead of all of the question. Also, I think California has a really detailed set of rules and instructions that they provide to the assessors, which I think helps to make some definitions clearer that maybe here are a little bit less than clear.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony. We look forward to that writing when you have the chance to give it to the committee, and we'll put it in OLIS if we could. Thank you. I'm going to ask some proponents to come forward, and then we'll hear from some opponents. Joe Basler, Felicia Higgins, Bob Livingston, please. And I'm going to ask you, given the shortness of the time we have, to confine your remarks to 2 or 2.5 minutes at the most, because I want to be able to hear from as many of the people we have here as we can.
Hi. Chair Barnhart, for the record, my name is Lisa Higgins. I'm the political director of SEIU Local 49. We're here in support of House Bill 3034, although we would like to see some changes to the current draft. I think that the previous panel went over sort of the overall the exemption, so I'll skip that. But property taxes do represent the largest category of exemptions for nonprofit hospitals, which is important to note. And hospital tax exemptions are part of a broader system of charitable exemptions intended to reward organizations that provide service to community and seemingly reduce the burden or demand for services required of the state or local governments. I think Rebecca talked about the creation of Medicare and Medicaid and the expansion of the Affordable Care Act and the reduction in charity care. There was a little bit of a misunderstanding. Charity care actually doesn't include bad debt. That's a separate category. However, as premiums are decreasing, out-of-pocket costs continue to rise, and SEIU strongly believes that the best way to provide quality care is it starts with a robust public health system that right now is focused at the county level, and also a robust primary care system. And so 3034, although it does create a bright line for the tax assessors, it also answers a policy question about do we believe that clinics should be providing a community benefit to get a tax exemption? And if that is the case, then it also does one of two things. Either you become taxable or you increase spending on charity in your primary care clinic, which we believe is beneficial to the overall community. It also creates an issue of fairness. We'll take Washington County as an example. Because of this issue, the way health systems are taking properties on and off the rolls varies wildly, actually, between health systems. And so if you take a look at Washington County, where there are three major health systems, Kaiser, Providence, and Tualatin, all three of those determine individually which properties they'll take off the rolls and which properties they won't take off the rolls. And the percentage of properties that each of those are taking are claiming exemption for vary wildly and are not always connected to their charity care spending. We also think that...
If you could wrap up, that
yes,
would be
helpful.
Yes, I will. Thank you.
So House Bill 3034, the changes that we would like to see in the bill that we think are important are charity care should be at cost, not at charges. That should be clearly defined. The formulary should be based on net patient revenue, not gross patient revenue, which is an important issue for many of the health systems here. And that we believe that the 15% of gross patient revenue is a little bit too high, although there should be a clear threshold set.
Thank you.
Joe Baesler, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. My name is Joe Baesler. I work for Oregon AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees. Not to add too much, I just want to say that we see our county workers having to do more with less on a regular basis, and they are serving the public in a lot of ways. You have developmentally delayed service workers who are caseworkers who have 200 to 300 cases in their case management. It's taking weeks to get permits out of construction permits. There is a real public drain on public services that are happening. And so if you're going to take or exempt folks from property taxes, you have to think about the cost that it's causing the public in another realm. There's a lot of money flowing through hospitals, and we want to take a very hard look at, does it make sense to let that money not flow into the public service where it could. So that's all I really have to add. Thank you.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Livingston, representing the Oregon State Firefighters Council. I'm also a veteran of the fire service for 20 years. I think for us, the clarity is an important element as we see ever-changing developments in healthcare. And as the previous speakers noted, we are seeing more and more nonprofits move into clinic settings and perhaps even doctor's offices that are owned by a nonprofit. I think from our standpoint, clearly, I think everybody recognizes that the fire department is called if there's a natural gas leak, hazardous material, certainly a fire in those types of instances. What I can suggest to you, though, is a very day-to-day common occurrence that in these types of settings, your firefighters and paramedics are the first responders that go to these places when there is an actual true emergency, such as in a clinic, if they're there simply for general care and they have an acute cardiac event, shortness of breath, it's 911 that's activated. So it's your local firefighters and paramedics that respond. So those revenues that could be realized through property taxes put an additional burden on those local government services that are an essential function, not only to the healthcare modality, but also to the communities. And so as you deliberate this bill, we think it makes sense that clearly as the broadened scope of healthcare, when it comes to clinics, when it comes to doctor's offices, just because simply you're a nonprofit, you're exempt in, but yet we may respond to a similar facility that is an LLC. They are paying the property taxes. And fortunately, we still don't discriminate when 911 calls. We go and take care of business. So with that, hopefully you can address that with some clarity, and we think it's important that we address the revenue issues, particularly at the local government level, for some of the services that are essential, like fire and EMS response.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? That was very clear. It would be useful to have your specific criteria in writing, and I can hold the record open on this bill, can't I? So if you submit that for OLIS, we'll get it into the end of the record. That would be very helpful. Thank you. And we'll hear now from Peter Stoloff, Jenny Ollum, Howard Grammon, please. Thank you for your patience today.
Thank you. Chair Barnhart, my name is Peter Stoloff, committee. Peter Stoloff. I'm an attorney in private practice. I've submitted some materials in writing today. I represent healthcare clients, primarily hospitals, in transactional matters, mergers, certificate of need, EMTALA, STARK, that kind of thing, and also tax exemption for both income tax and personal property and real property tax. The Oregon Association of Hospitals has asked me to provide testimony today. The testimony I'm giving reflects my views as a practitioner who regularly practices in this area. I do have substantial concerns regarding the bill. First, it would overturn well over 100 years of Oregon statutes and case law relating to the tax exemption. You heard from previous persons as to the Mercy case in Eugene in 1927. Where the Oregon Supreme Court held that any surplus generated by the tax-exempt hospital in Eugene called Mercy Hospital at that time was used to improve the hospital and to pay off the hospital's debt and to take care of patients, and that Mercy's exemption as a charitable corporation was not affected by the fact that it charged patients and devoted the income to the upkeep and the extension of free treatment to those unable to pay. And that case has been affirmed in subsequent cases and remains the law today. There is a rule of the Oregon Department of Revenue. I'm now in item two of my submission, OAR 150-307.130A3, which does provide clarity to the county assessors in elaborate detail as to whether real and personal property qualify for the exemption. And they go into detail, the rules go into detail with respect to the element of gift or giving. I have a copy of the rules here. They're three or four pages in length. And I have litigated these cases in the Oregon Tax Court, Magistrate Division, and regular tax court, and before the Department of Revenue. And the court grapples very clearly with these the element of gift or giving, and does measure it against previous cases, against certain income thresholds, 5%, 3% of charity care. In my opinion, there is sufficient clarity. And I think it would be, in my humble opinion, a mistake to just overturn wholesale the 150 years, actually it is, of Oregon law with respect to this. In item three of my letter.
And if you could wrap up, please, that would be helpful.
Item three
your letter, of course, we can read.
Yeah. Item three of my letter, there are two recent cases from the Oregon Tax Court Magistrate Division where they specifically held that physician clinics that were acquired by hospitals were taxable. So the courts are grappling with these issues. Hospitals do pay substantial real and personal property taxes in item four. In item five, I think it's an important point that the rule, the statute as drafted, House Bill 3034, is unduly narrow because it would only allow accidents of victims of accidents and persons who were acutely ill, those hospital facilities that were providing services for those persons, to be tax exempt, and it would not allow any exemption for persons seeking outpatient services who are not acutely ill. And that could be as simple as a elective hernia surgery. It could be outpatient surgery of any nature. It could be a sleep center services for persons who have sleep disorders. And finally, I think that district hospitals are disadvantaged by this rule because they are, in some cases, 501c3 and therefore would be subject to this statute. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. My name is Jenny Ullum. I'm Director of Public Affairs for Peace Health. And in the interest of time, I'm going to defer to my colleague, but I am here to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Jen.
Hi. This is Dr. Howard Grayman, Chair Barnhart, and members of the committee. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the Peace Health Medical Group. Peace Health is a not-for-profit organization that operates 9 clinics, 4 hospitals, has about 300 providers in Lane County, as you probably know. Our comments have been submitted. I want to make a few quick points.
Thanks.
One is that we do pay taxes in Lane County. We pay $1 million a year in property tax. We're the 9th largest payer of taxes, even more than some of the largest companies such as Weyerhaeuser in that county. And our assessors seem to understand how to distinguish what we pay taxes on and what we don't. So parking lots and other things, that spaces that we either don't use or rent to for-profit medical groups, are taxed, and we pay that. Second of all, I want to clarify some comments made earlier that nothing changes when we buy a for-profit medical group and have them become part of our system. That is not correct. Most for-profit medical groups focus completely on commercial patients and minimize government pay patients of Medicaid and Medicare as much as possible to make their bottom line. When they're finally suffering and in survival mode, they come to us often and we buy the practice. And as soon as we buy them, we convert them to the commitment that we have to serve the underprivileged and those who are at risk. And so those practices don't operate the way they used to. They begin to see 25% and 30% Medicaid and people who can't afford it, just like the already existing practices. I want to clarify that. The other point I want to make is that in the case of rural care, I would submit to you that if we didn't purchase practices in Dexter and Creswell and Florence and Cottage Grove, you wouldn't have care in those communities, and we wouldn't be able to operate the 2 hospitals that we do in Cottage Grove and Florence. If there are no doctors and they can't afford to practice if we don't purchase them, there can't be any hospitals, and that care would not be provided. So I think we need to be clear about what the motive is of a not-for-profit health system. Thanks very much.
Thank you. That was right at 2 minutes. You're very good. Are there questions for this panel? This is the other expert panel. Here's your chance. Yes, Representative Leininger, please.
Thank you so much for being here. So I'm learning about this issue, but one of the things that I have heard is that changes in expansion of coverage, health insurance coverage, has really changed the amount of non-payment that hospitals that perhaps previously had a lot of non-paying customers experience, and that also there is a trend perhaps among hospitals of buying ambulatory care, you know, ambulatory surges, centers, things like that, that might be quite lucrative to operate. And if they become part of a nonprofit, then potentially they become even more lucrative to operate because maybe they are taxed then more favorably. What, in your experience, do you think about those two questions? Is that a thing?
I can comment about the practices. It is true that we have had, because of the expansion of Medicaid in the state, that we've had a lot of folks who would normally have not been able to afford their care, that we would have considered charity and not be paid for that. However, the payment rate for Medicaid is well below the cost of providing the care. So we are still, it still costs us more to provide care than the money that we're paid. And so we're still at a disadvantage in that regard. And I do think temporarily there's going to be some lift from that, and I think we're seeing that this year. I will say, though, that the grand bargain to get ACA passed was that hospital payments would be reduced over the succeeding 10 years. And as a health system that gets more of its revenue from hospitals than from practices, over time we're going to be put in jeopardy when hospital income is reduced. If we reduce it both on the hospital side and the group side, I think we'll be in great distress. It would be difficult to maintain a margin that allows us to continue to invest the way we have to. Just to say a quick word about what investment I'm talking about, we're going to spend $400 million in Peace Health throughout the system to install a new Epic electronic medical record system that's mandated by the federal government just so we can meet meaningful use and other criteria. That kind of huge thirst for capital is something that we have to feed. And the only way we do that is by keeping some kind of a modest margin.
One of the things that your smaller clinics could not possibly afford
Absolutely
to do
not.
On their own.
We couldn't keep them open, right.
Representative Vance?
Just a question for Peter. Can you synthesize the court's holding in maybe a sentence on what it is that's charitable? I know we're going to see about 16 points, but is there one bright, shining thing we can point at that says this is what should enjoy this exemption?
Yes. I mean, the rule of the Oregon Department of Revenue says that the entity has to have a charitable purpose. It has to have there has to be an element of gift or giving, and they describe that that means it could mean a number of things. Whether receipts are applied to the upkeep, maintenance, and equipment of the institution, whether there is charges are made to persons, are lesser charges made to the poor, are any charges made to the indigent, and those kinds of things. But primarily it would be once you are 501c3 or a nonprofit corporation in Oregon, it would be an element of gift or giving. And that can be, you know, a number of things in terms, but mostly it would be uncompensated care, which would be generally care that's for charity patients, those who are unable to pay. But it can also include losses incurred by the institution from providing services to Medicaid patients at below cost. That's been recognized by the Oregon Tax Court.
That answers my question. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
Again, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, just one point I think that might speak to your question, Representative Leininger, is just provide some context. Our entire tax burden, if we were fully taxable, is around $12 million in Lane County. Our community benefit, of which charity care is a very small amount, the rest is Medicare and Medicaid, as Mr. Stoloff alluded, is in excess of $100 million. So just to provide some sense of context.
And you actually answered the question I was going to ask, which was, are you allowed to count the underpayment that you receive? And I think the answer is yes.
Well, in the Oregon Tax Court, there's a 1972 case called Emanuel Hospital where Judge Carlisle Roberts held that if a hospital provides care to a Medicaid patient, at that time Adult and Family Services or something else, that the loss that the hospital incurs on treating that patient would be treated as an element of gift or giving. And that makes sense because you're right. providing services at $10.
So the answer is yes.
For something that costs you $20.
Right. Right.
And costs, not at charges.
Right. No, I understand. Costs, not charges.
Correct. And that below cost.
Of course, that was raised by one of the earlier witnesses, too. And I take it that I got a head nod from Ms. Ullum at that moment. I suspect that you agree with the earlier witness's statement that it ought to be based on costs, not charges.
Oh, correct. I think below the cost of service.
Right.
Because then you're incurring a loss.
Right.
Okay. I just want the record to show, Mr. Chair, that I thought SEIU made some good points.
Thank you. That's very helpful. Other questions? Representative Weininger, please.
Thank you. The other concern that I've heard raised is a little akin to, remember when Goodwill of the Columbia Willamette got a lot of heat for compensating its executive director at a really, really high rate. What would you say to people in the larger community who think that some of the compensation of executives in the healthcare industry is so large that it's hard to see how that's consistent with a charitable operation?
I would go to the reality of the market. We have to have competent, skilled professionals running very complex organizations, and it's just the fact that to get those people, you have to pay what the market suggests you pay. And if you offer somebody 50 or 75% of what the going rate is for an executive who's running a $2 billion company, you're going to get someone who doesn't have a clue how to do that, and you're going to wind up with a company that isn't successful. So I don't have a better explanation than the fact that that's what it costs to get an executive to run this kind of a company.
Chair Barnhart and Representative Leninger, my view would be the Form 990 that's filed by hospitals with the Internal Revenue Service has a specific section, I believe it's M, as in Matthew, dealing with the compensation of hospital executives. It's all public information. You can get it off the internet like this. And the attorney generals of several states, including Minnesota most recently, have investigated and actually fined hospital systems for paying their executives too much money. And so there's a because of the public nature of that information now, it serves as a natural check and a balance to keep that compensation within reasonable limits. And moreover, a hospital would be violating its 501c3 status if it paid more than reasonable compensation to its executives or employees or physicians for that matter.
Thank you. I'll note to the committee we're going to adjourn in about a minute and a half because we have to get to 3 o'clock meetings. Representative Whitsitt, did you have a question?
Yes, I was wondering if we have a list somewhere of all of the hospitals and medical facilities that would fall under this bill.
Good question. We'll ask Kyle to see what he can determine for us. And if any of the witnesses here today want to assist in that endeavor, we would welcome that, or anyone who happens to be watching us on the internet. Thank you. Thank you very much. We very much appreciate the involvement of all of the witnesses we've had today. We have not heard from the cities or the counties. I'd invite them to submit their remarks in writing if possible. We're going to currently close this public hearing. I won't promise that I'm going to open another one later, but it's possible. With that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3034. We will hold over until tomorrow the work sessions on House Bill 2131 and House Bill 2148. Those will be, hopefully we'll have time to work those bills tomorrow. Paul, should I hold 3172 over or should we repost? We'll also hold over the public hearing on House Bill 3172 until tomorrow. And have I done it all? I have. Thank you very much. With that, the committee is adjourned.